Welcome to Fabulous Fiction Fridays. We're so excited that you've joined us for this awesome little escape. Your host is Darlene Poyer, and she brings a real passion for reading to this show. This show is all about having fun, expanding your reading horizons, and bringing a little joy to your day. And now, your host, Darlene Poyer.
Hello, and welcome to our fourth episode of Fabulous Fiction Fridays. It's hard to believe that we're already almost a month into this, and I feel really blessed to have this opportunity to spread good fiction around. And speaking of good fiction, today is a special day as we are honored to have David Heaton from England join us. David and I first exchanged emails a few years ago when he submitted a story for publication. Something Other was so different from anything else I'd read at the time. He successfully combined a couple of different genres of fiction together to create a true page-turner. Although it's been a few years since I've read it, I still remember many of the details quite clearly. David is a very talented author and screenwriter, as we'll find out shortly. And for this episode, David is reading Touch Paper for us. There are a number of links to some of David's works on the Pages of Stories website, as well as some information about him. Just go to the events section and click on the link from the Tenacious Living area. You'll find out all about him, and you can also download his story, Something Other, on that same page. And it's our gift to you. So without further ado, I give you David Heaton and Touch Paper.
As he reached the security barrier at the television studios, he stopped and took a deep breath. The buildings behind the red and white outstretched wooden arm stared back blankly at him, as did the youthful security guard who was chewing on a cheeseburger.
"Can I help you?"
The voice was two-tone, wavering between a squeal and a bass. Norman blinked.
I'm here for the auditions, the talent show."
He pushed a crumpled piece of paper towards the adolescent guard, who took it between finger and thumb as if it was infected. Between bites of his burger, he perused it thoroughly, hoping to find something in it which would justify refusing Norman entry, such as written evidence of a lack of any talent whatsoever. "Right," he said finally, with a tone of disappointment. "They'll tell you where to go at reception. Straight ahead, through those glass doors." He looked Norman up and down. "Don't forget to open them," he added. Norman walked quickly through the checkpoint. He consoled himself with the thought that in another few months the pimply youth would be begging him for his autograph, as well as for his job back. This was going to be his day. He entered the reception area, cool and dark, courtesy of large tinted windows, and looked around him. On the walls were photographs of the TV company's stars, game show hosts, comedians, actors, singers and newsreaders. Norman felt his pulse begin to beat a little faster as he took his place in this sanitized hall of fame. The receptionist, a young woman with a fixed grin-and-bear-it smile, was dispensing information to a quickly decreasing queue of varied individuals. Norman took advantage of the delay to put down the large suitcase he was carrying, sighing with relief as he did so. The receptionist was raising her voice. "Yes, madam, I know. The cleaning vacancy, down the corridor, third on the right." An elderly woman shuffled off, and a man in a suit took her place. "News and current affairs, sir. Across the quadrangle, over there." Her smile began to wilt as a workman in greasy blue overalls and a bad mood demanded to know where the boiler room was. "Give me strength," she said to the ceiling as Norman moved forward. "Sorry, sir, I didn't mean you. I've had them all today. How can I help you?" Norman handed her the letter, noticing with embarrassment that some of the security guard's cheeseburger had adhered itself to the paper. "I'm here for the auditions, for the talent show." He spoke slowly, savouring the words. The receptionist stared at him. Norman knew she was wondering what talent he could possibly be concealing about his person, but it didn't bother him. He was used to it. "Right, down that corridor, over there, right to the end. You'll see the room for the auditions. There's a sign on the door." With a frown, she consulted a list in front of her, ticking his name off. "You're a little late. In fact, you're the last one. You can go right in." Norman blinked. "But I have to get changed first," he said, a note of panic creeping into his voice. "My costume." The receptionist sighed, and Norman felt a rush of warm air on his face. "Right, I'll ring and tell them to expect you in a few minutes then. You'll find the gents' toilets round the corner from the audition room. You can change in there." She looked him up and down once more. "You will have to hurry, though." Norman thanked her with the status of a man about to be unleashed on an unsuspecting world. Dragging his suitcase, he shuffled off down the corridor, perspiration beginning to break out on his skin. "Calm down," he told himself. "Sweat could ruin the whole thing." The bathroom was empty, and Norman swung his suitcase onto the wash basins, checking first that they were devoid of any water. He flicked the catch with a shiver of trepidation, lest the contents had been damaged in his journey down from the north. His excitement heightened as he took out the suit which lay inside. To a casual observer, it looked like any ordinary gentleman's slightly old-fashioned pinstriped suit. A closer inspection revealed modifications and bulges here and there, and from the way Norman handled it, it was obviously heavy. In the case beneath the suit lay a pair of shoes, a welder's face mask, and a large CD player. Norman took these out as well, leaving the suitcase empty. He changed with the ease of one who has practiced such a manoeuvre many times in his bedroom. It took him 2 minutes 4 seconds to transform himself from a frustrated factory production worker into a star in waiting. Looking at his watch, he exited the bathroom, found the sign on the door, took a deep breath, and entered. He was dimly aware of the three people sitting at a safe distance behind a table at the far end of the room. His main concern was the size of the area, which he noted with relief was big enough. Even the window was open, almost as if someone had been listening to his prayers. "If you'd just like to take a seat..." The voice from the table was drowned out as Norman turned on the CD player and placed it on the floor. He spun round, aided by the skating rollers built into his shoes, and pressed something in his jacket pocket as music began to screech out from the player. On his back, the picture of a space rocket suddenly ignited into flames, followed immediately by the jet-like gush of white flame from underneath the back of his jacket. The force caused him to start moving slowly on his skates as the room became cloudy with smoke. He flicked a button on something in his hand which looked like a TV remote control. Instantly, the breast pocket on his jacket popped up to reveal a Catherine wheel, which proceeded to whirl round in a sparking frenzy. Norman was all concentration. Behind the safety of the welder's face mask, his eyes glowed in an almost manic stare, reflecting the flames from his act. He began to perform well-rehearsed steps on his skates, whirling and twirling roller disco fashion as sparks and smoke belched out from his suit. The music continued to resound throughout the room as another flick of a button produced a series of mini rockets which popped and hissed into the air from the region of Norman's shoulder pads. He pointed dramatically at the door, and long thin slivers of multicoloured fire flew magically towards the woodwork from his fingertips, dropping harmlessly to the floor where they just sizzled away. The voice from the CD player was pounding to a climax. Norman skated crazily from one side of the room to the other, cordite spitting in his wake. Suddenly, he stopped, wrapped his arms around himself, and began to spin. Slowly at first, then faster and faster until his body was just a blur. At the same time, a myriad of red, white, and blue sparks shot out from his suit in a showering cascade, totally enveloping the whirling vortex that was Norman. As the song reached its manic end, Norman stopped. There was an incredibly loud and final bang from deep within the bowels of his fire-retardant suit. He threw out his arms and bowed. The room was still. It took a few seconds for the smoke to clear through the open window, and a little longer for the coughing of the stunned observers to die down. When it finally dissipated, it revealed Norman, now minus the mask, out of breath and anxious-faced, his suit hanging off him in tatters, still fizzing in places, blackened and scorched in others. He was staring at the panel like a child, waiting to learn if it was to be praised or chastised. The two men and one woman sat open-mouthed. One of the men, a large gentleman with a scant amount of hair on his head, blinked. As if this action had somehow reanimated him, he began to clap, rocking forward with delight and nodding his head in approval. The others, taking his cue, began to do likewise. "Brilliant! Absolutely brilliant!" The large gentleman's face was red with coughing. The other two echoed his sentiments, murmuring their appreciation to each other behind hand claps. Norman sighed with relief as bits of burned material dropped to the floor around him. He couldn't believe it. Everything in the routine had gone according to plan. Months of scrimping and saving to buy materials, countless late nights carefully fitting up the suit and making it flame retardant, checking each connection, sewing in the fireworks, making sure everything was right down to the last detail for 3 minutes of pyrotechnic splendour and his big chance of fame and glory. And they'd actually liked him. They were still clapping as he broke into a happy grin. "Now you go and knock 'em dead, son. They'll love it." The large man took a sip from a glass of water in front of him. Norman laughed. "Thanks very much. Of course, it takes some time to fix the suit." He stopped. "Knock who dead?" he asked suspiciously. I take it you're here for that talent thing." He saw the confused look on Norman's face. "This is the interview for the cleaner vacancy. You want the room round the corner." Blackened, ragged, smouldering and spent, Norman's face stirred back in disbelief as the man spoke comforting words. "Don't worry. Just go right in there and do that again, and you've got it made."
What a fun story that was. I've listened to it a few times now, and each time I can't help but feel for poor Norman. The thing is, I bet each of us can relate to a similar situation. So we have Touch Paper's talented author, David Heaton, here with us today. Thank you for joining us, David.
Oh, it's my pleasure, darling. Thank you.
So before we get into your many talents, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, darling, I live in a little village in the county of Lancashire, which is in the north of England, with my wife, Martina, and my daughter, Lauren. I was born and brought up in this area, so it's a place I know very well and feel very comfortable with. Like yourself, darling, I was always obsessed with books as a child, and I couldn't get enough of them. And I wore out the library's stock of children's books very quickly, and I used to spend all my pocket money on buying books. And even now, our house is absolutely groaning under the weight of books, and every cupboard seems full of them. I've always enjoyed writing from a very early age. In the beginning, I'd handwrite stories, but then my parents very kindly gave me a little typewriter, and I used that for a very long time. At the moment, I'm very lucky in that I work part-time at a local hospital, which allows me time to write. And my other great passion is walking, and I do a lot of that around Lancashire and the rest of Britain, hill walking and mountain climbing. And when I can, I drag my wife and my daughter with me as well, sometimes protesting.
Well, I've been to some of those areas of England, and it's quite beautiful, so I imagine it's not as big a protest as it might seem.
Not all the time, no.
No. And that would explain the environment that something other was created in. So when I did publish something other, it tended towards the darker side. But touch paper is so lighthearted in comparison, and you've also written a children's book. How are you able to go from one genre to another?
Well, that's a very good question, Darlene, and I'm not sure I really know the answer. I do think that certain types of writing call to you at different times and in different situations. And I know that personally, I don't really wake up and consciously think, today I'm going to write a horror story, or today I'll have a go at something lighthearted. For me, it seems to work on a slightly more subconscious level, whereby a certain kind of story may have been playing around in my head for a few days and it won't go away. So then I know it's time to get it down on paper. Why I choose things that are seemingly at opposite ends of the spectrum, humour and horror, I really don't know. Again, it's the writing that calls to me personally and not the other way around. I always think of Stephen King's reply to that question when somebody asked him, what do you write, what you write? And he said, what makes you think I have a choice? And I think that really says it all in a lot of ways. It's the genre that chooses you.
It's really quite unique that you go through so many different genres of fiction. Do you find that sometimes when you're writing, whether it's a horror or a lighthearted comedic piece, do you find that you're in that space for a few stories, or does it seem to come at you rather randomly?
A little bit of both, I think. I do find it, if I'm in that frame of mind to write something which is slightly darker, I do tend to stop in it for a little while until it gradually wears off. and I find myself just thinking about much lighter things, and then lighter ideas for stories will tend to pop in there. So I do, like you say, you're quite right, I do go through phases of different genres of story, yes.
Yeah, that's... I would think that it would be hard to switch from going one directly to another and then back and forth, because your brain is probably in that mode for a while.
Well, you're absolutely right. I can't do that. I know some people write several stories at the same time. You know, they have a few on the go. I can't do that. I have to finish one and then sort of wait for my mood to change, or, you know, something else to pop in there, really. Yeah, I can't just switch from one to the other very quickly.
So when you write, you only ever have one story on the go at a time?
Yes, I do. Yes. I find I'm a bit tunnel visioned like that, and I do have to finish something before I can move on to something else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can entirely sympathize with that, because since the start of this radio program, I find I can't think of more than one show at a time. For our listeners, Something Other, it actually takes place in Northern England, or actually it almost seemed like it was in Scotland. Where did you envision that particular story?
Well, I did actually envision it in the north of England. There's some very wild moorland countryside, as you probably know, mm-hmm. when you visited. And there are lots of ancient artifacts, like standing stones, rocks and things like that. And I often wonder the history of them, mm-hmm. what could have happened in the past, and how it can affect today. And that's where Something Other came from, really.
Yeah, well, you certainly make good use of the woods in that story.
Thank you.
So the story that you read today, Touch Paper, I know that it's created some great opportunities for you. Would you like to share with us what's happened since you first wrote Touch Paper?
Oh, yes, thank you. Yeah, well, Touch Paper was a story which I wrote many years ago now. And until a few years ago, it had remained in a drawer, really, keeping lots of other stories I'd written company. And then about 5 years ago, I read about a new publishing venture by Amazon, the Kindle store, whereby authors could basically publish their work themselves as ebooks be downloaded. So I thought I'd give it a go, and I for a collection of stories that I'd written over the years together, and I put it out there, and Touch Paper was one of those stories. And about 9 months after I'd published it, I received an email from a director and a very nice gentleman in New York called Nick Rafter, who said he'd read the stories, he liked them, and would I be interested in writing a short story for him, developing the character of Norman in Touch Paper, which Nick would then like to turn into a screenplay for a short film. Well, I nearly bit his arm off, actually, at the opportunity. And Nick and I hatched out the storyline. I wrote the story, and Nick adapted it into the screenplay, which I also assisted on. And the result was a short film shot in New York called Open Spaces, which features Norman and his pyrotechnic suit, and which has now been very lucky. It's been shown at several film festivals around the world. And we were very honoured last year to receive the award for short form screenwriting at the Vision Fest Film Festival in New York. So it's been very good to me, that story, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
I'm always amazed at the understated talent of so many authors that send their stories in. And everyone is just so humble about it, and as you are, but to have received an award like that is really quite an accomplishment.
Well, thank you very much. It was a very great honour for myself and Nick, and me especially, really. He's done a lot of things like that, but for me that was a first, really, and I was very pleased, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm impressed. So what was that experience like, writing a screenplay versus a short story?
Very, very different. It's a completely different discipline, writing a script, one which I wasn't very familiar with, really. But fortunately, Nick did an excellent job of converting the story into a screenplay. I'm personally more comfortable with story writing, where you can take your time and use description to help the narrative.
Yeah.
But of course, in a script, the majority of the things are moved up forward by dialogue, which Nick was absolutely superb at. And I tried my best. For example, I'd write a part of a scene, and it's maybe take a page up of script and send it to Nick, and then he'd cut it down to a few lines, and it would be all the better for it. I did learn a lot from him. But we both, really, we played to our strengths, really. There's a lot of overlap. Nick helped on the story, I helped on the screenplay, and the end result worked very well.
Well, that's impressive, because you do lose that opportunity to create the environment when you're writing a screenplay, knowing that it's going to be somewhat visual. So
that's absolutely correct. And Nick was brilliant at that, because that's his job, basically. I did learn a lot from him, and I feel that if I should ever have to do something like that again, I would be much better at it, having learned from Nick, yeah.
Do you think you'll go down that road again?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I think, given the opportunity, I would love to have another go at something like that. I haven't done any more scripts since. I've just concentrated more on story writing as usual. But I think maybe in the future I would certainly like to give it another go, yeah.
And would you be interested in converting one of your existing stories to a script, or would you be more interested in creating something brand new?
Well, that's a good question. I have got a few ideas for stories which not all of them would convert. You know, you sort of get an instinctive feeling for something that would and wouldn't. And I have a couple which possibly might. So we'll see when I get to it, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you create. And speaking of that, what is next for David Heaton?
Well, the first thing I've got to do, darling, is I promised my daughter a few years ago that I would write a story for her, and I still haven't done it. So in the interest of domestic peace, I've got to do that. And I've also got several more short story ideas, which I'm going to write. And then finally, I think I'm going to make a start on a novel, which I've been promising myself I'd do for a long time. So that's the short-term plan, or long-term plan, as it probably will be, yeah.
And do you go about Northern England promoting any of your work?
That's one area which I'm not very good at, is self-promotion. I should get better at it, but time will tell, yeah.
Well, we're happy to promote what you send to us. I can tell you that you sure add a lot of depth to what we've published in the past. And
thank you very much.
And you know, I think our time is just about up. But I can't tell you what a pleasure it is for me to finally have a chance to speak with you after all these years of exchanging emails.
Likewise, darling. It's lovely to speak to you.
And for our listeners, you should know that there is all sorts of information about David on the Pages of Stories website. As I said earlier, just follow the links through the events section and you'll find all about this very talented author. Thank you, David, again for joining us today. It was a real pleasure.
My pleasure, darling. Thank you.
And to our listeners, all I can say is I'm looking forward to speaking with you again next week. Take care and happy reading.
Are you interested in appearing on Fabulous Fiction Fridays? Are you an author that wants to reach a wider audience? Are you a business owner that would like to reach dedicated listeners? Please feel free to contact Darlene at info@pagesofstories.com or visit www.pagesofstories.com and leave a message.